the 1960s, a singing group was formed in Jackson, Mississippi. It was formed by a father. A father had three sons who were great singers. They would sing at church and they were into gospel music and they had a cousin who knew how to sing as well. And so this dad kind of guarded them and guided them and helped them develop into a group called the Williams Brothers. Williams Brothers has been singing ever since the 1960s. They have been nominated for four different Grammys. They put out just multitudes of albums. And in the 1980s, they put out a song about a man who, it was an older man who lived in a little small community. And in that community, he didn't have much money, and so his clothes weren't very fancy, and he wasn't well educated, and he had gotten on up in age, and he would walk around in the little town there, and most people would ignore him, and an author of a song heard him one day, and he too said, "I would have ignored him, except for the last line that he said." And the last line that he said was, "I'm just a nobody, trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody." This past week, I was trying to come up with a title for my sermon, and I was really struggling. And I went and talked to Blake about it. I talked to a couple of other people. I said, "I just don't know what to call this lesson. I want the word nobody in it, but I don't know what else to add to it." And so I was online, and I came across this song. I went and told Blake about it, and Blake said, "I've got another song, too, that goes right along that same line." And so I entitled the lesson this morning, "I'm Just a Nobody Trying to Tell Everybody About Somebody Who Can Save Anybody." Jesus in John chapter 4 is having to leave Judea. He has launched his public ministry during the Passover. He had basically started preaching and baptizing people, even though Jesus didn't do the baptizing. It was his disciples who were baptizing. The Pharisees had heard about it. And so the Pharisees were beginning to note who Jesus was. They didn't like John, therefore they weren't going to like Jesus. And so Jesus decided to go back into Galilee where it was safer. John writes in the text that he had to go through Samaria. Now technically he didn't. He could go down to Jericho, cross the Jordan River, and bypass Samaria. Samaria lay just north of Judea, and then of course right north of Samaria was Galilee. But one of the things I think we need to realize is that Jesus never accidentally did anything. Jesus intentionally, very intentionally, lived his life. And so when John said he had to go through Samaria, I think he really meant it. You look through the text and it says that he came to a little town called Sychar near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And that's where Jacob's well was. Sychar was located near an ancient city called Shechem. Shechem was, in fact, one of the most important cities in all of the Old Testament. When Abraham came out of Babylonia, he came into the promised land, built an altar at Shechem, and worshiped God. When Jacob came back from Padan Aram and had met Esau, he settled near Shechem here. When the Israelites came out of Egyptian bondage, when they came into the land of promise, they were told, "You're together near Shechem on two mountains, Mount Gerizim here on the left, Mount Ebal here on the right," and there they were to divide up the tribes and half of them be on one mountain and half on the other, and there would be the reading of the blessings and the curses, and the people would respond appropriately. Shechem was a very important place. And of course, near Shechem would have been a lot of little smaller villages, very much like Nashville. I don't know about you, but when I'm out of town and people ask me, "Where are you from?" I tell them I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. Now, the truth is, I've never lived in Nashville. I've lived in Madison, I've lived in Goodlettsville, I've never lived in Nashville. But you're like me, it's the nearest big city. And so instead of trying to explain where Madison or Goodlettsville or Hendersonville or Old Hickory or Lakewood, you get the point, right? I mean, Nashville's surrounded by all these little bitty small communities. Nashville's not unique. Ancient cities were the same way. And so Sychar would have been probably just a collection of houses. A few hundred people at best probably lived there. And nearby was Jacob's Well. And so Jesus shows up there, and a woman comes up. It's noontime. And Jesus asks her for a drink of water. Now, the disciples have gone in to buy food, and here Jesus is as this woman approaches. I know for her, it was one of those awkward moments. Have you ever gotten into an elevator, going up 6, 7, 8 floors, and one other person gets in with you, and you can't bring yourself to speak to them? Have you ever had that experience? I mean, you're sitting there, you're looking at your phone, they're looking at their phone, and all you want to do is get off on the next floor. I mean, you're just kind of like, I should say something, but what do I say, and how do I say it? And, you know, you just really struggle. Now, let me say, if you go with John Micah, that's not a problem. John Micah will speak to anybody. I've seen him get in elevators by himself and start talking. I mean, it is crazy. But I'm not that way. Okay? And I can imagine this Samaritan woman, as she is approaching the well, she is very anxious. Who is this guy? Where is he from? What does he want? And then Jesus speaks to her. A violation of every protocol known at that time. He's a Jew. She's a Samaritan. She immediately says, "You, a Jew, you're asking from a Samaritan a drink of water?" And their conversation is going to continue. Now, here's what we need to realize about this story that a lot of times we miss, is that when you get to the end of chapter 2 of John, John says that Jesus started performing signs which caused people to start to put their faith in him. And then what you have in John chapter 3 is an example of that. Nicodemus. Nicodemus even begins by saying, you've got to be someone from God because no one could perform the signs you're doing unless God was with him. And so you watch Nicodemus as the seeds, very important to notice that word, of faith are planted in him. It's going to take a while for those seeds to take root. Well, when we get to chapter 4, we don't need to think, okay, John's moving on to something else. He's not. John's simply continuing telling the story about people who, when they encounter Jesus, come to faith in him. And more importantly, what John seems to be doing is that he takes the story of Nicodemus, and he wants you to have that in mind as he tells this second story. I want you to notice the contrast. A lot of times we don't notice this. In John chapter 3, we have Nicodemus, a man whose name means victory of the people. What a beautiful name. In John chapter 4, we have a woman who has no name at all. She's a nobody. In John chapter 3, you have a man who's a Pharisee. He is a part of one of these elite religious political groups. He's moved up the ladder of success. I mean, here is a guy that everybody respects. And then you turn over and you see here a woman who is a Samaritan. Samaritans were an odd group. 722 B.C., the Assyrians had come in. They had taken the northern tribes and carried them off into captivity. But they had left behind several thousand Israelites. These would have been the aged, the poor, the uneducated, those who really couldn't assist the Assyrians. And so they were left into the land. And then the Assyrians brought seven nations in to populate the land. And so you end up with this mixture of Israelites, a very small number of Israelites, and then a much larger number of these Gentile nations who had been brought in. Now, according to 2 Kings, you have this weird thing that happens. When the pagan nations get in here, they don't know who Yahweh is, and so they're not worshiping him. God becomes angry and begins to send the lions in. Now, you need to picture that scene. I mean, I've had a problem before. I remember the first time June and I moved to Nashville. We were living up at Piccadilly Apartments on Conference Drive. And I remember pulling in one night after an elders meeting and there being a skunk on the sidewalk. And I remember thinking, I can't get in my apartment because that skunk. By the way, the fact I was at an elders meeting has nothing to do with there being a skunk there later on, okay? I want to make sure y'all realize that. No symbolism there at all. But anyway, I'm like, I can't get in my apartment. I got to be honest with you, I'd rather wait out a skunk than I would a lion. I mean, can you imagine going out to take the trash, you know, and your wife like, where's little Johnny? And I don't know, I saw a lion dragging him off in the backyard. You know, he's gone now. That's what was going on in Israel. Word was sent back to the Assyrian king, you've got to do something. He goes and finds priests from Israel, sends them back down into the territory there that had once been their home in order to educate these pagans who Yahweh was. And the end result was this kind of mixture of paganism and Judaism, and they began to worship God their own way. They worshiped Yahweh. They just didn't worship Yahweh like the Israelites did or like the Jews did. They built a temple on Mount Gerizim. Judea had the temple down in Jerusalem. They only followed the first five books of the law. They followed not only the law but the prophets and the writings. And so you've got all of these differences going on. And because of that, Jews hated Samaritans, and Samaritans generally hated Jews. And so you see the difference in the two. Nicodemus is a member of the Sanhedrin. He has moved up the ladder of success. This woman's been married and divorced five times. I've sat in a court before. I've listened to a judge dissolve a marriage and just watch hearts break. I've heard the horrible experiences of people who have to travel down this road. And here's a woman who had traveled it not once, not twice, not three times. She had been married and divorced five times. And I don't know if you've ever paused and asked why. I mean, what was it that made five men reject her? And I've got some thoughts on that, and I'll share those here in a moment. But here was a woman whose life was in total chaos. I mean, here's a man who's a member of the Sanhedrin. Here's a woman who's been divorced five times. Here's a man who no doubt is wealthy. I mean, he's living in a nice house. He's got nice furniture. He's got money to spend. And here's a woman who has sold herself. She is finally living with a man who will give her basically shelter, food, clothes, if she will give him, and you can fill in the blank. But there's one other thing about these two stories that you must not miss. And oftentimes, again, if we read through the text too fast, we'll miss them. Nicodemus comes to Jesus at night. This woman comes to Jesus at noon. And while those may be just accidental notes, I don't think they are. I think it basically is telling us Nicodemus is still walking in the dark, but here's a woman who's going to be walking in the light very soon. They begin this incredible conversation as she hands Jesus water to drink. Jesus said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asked you for the drink, you would ask him and he would give you living water. Much like the story of Nicodemus where you have the new birth, this time you have living water. Jesus all the time is using these cryptic methods of trying to begin conversation. He does so here. And what's interesting about it is the woman responds the same way Nicodemus did. Nicodemus is like, wait a minute, in order to be born again, you mean I've got to go back into my mother's womb and be born a second time? And of course, that wasn't right. This woman's the same way. She says, sir, listen, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where in the world are you going to get this living water? Are you greater than Jacob who dug this well and gave it to us? Jesus, much like Nicodemus, continues the conversation. Everyone who drinks this water, and we know the case, will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. And here it's very important that you realize that what Jesus is talking about is the same thing he was talking about with Nicodemus. In the story of Nicodemus, you have Nicodemus, a Pharisee, and the Pharisees had in blot rejected John the Baptist. They had not been baptized by John. Jesus comes along, tells Nicodemus, you must be born again. You must be born of water, John's baptism, and you must be born of spirit, his baptism. Jesus comes along with a woman and does basically the same thing. Because you see, the living water he talks about here, if you turn over to John chapter 7, let anyone who is thirsty come and drink. Whoever believes in me, as Scripture says, rivers of living water will flow from within them. And by this he meant the Spirit. You see, one of the things that John's gospel does, much more than, say, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, even though they mention the Spirit, is that John is constantly trying to say to us, you need to pay attention to the work of the Spirit. Because as important as the ministry of Jesus Christ was in His coming and dying and then being raised again and returning to heaven, equally important is the work of the Holy Spirit. I mean, one of the things that John's trying to get across is that Jesus has not left us as orphans, but He has sent His Spirit to us, and we need to be people who allow that Spirit to do its work in our lives. And we're going to see it begin to do the work in this woman's life. Jesus tells her to go and call her husband. And you remember how that she says, I don't have a husband. And Jesus says, that's right, you've had five, and the one that you're currently living with is not your husband. You actually are telling the truth. My guess as to why she was married this many times, and this is just a guess on my part, Brother Rodney, I don't know if you've ever thought about that or explored that, but I wonder if she wasn't an attractive lady. Five men had wanted to marry her. But if you don't know anything about the ancient culture, the most important thing for Jews and probably for Samaritans as well was to obey the first of God's commandments, which was to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And my guess is that here was a woman, because we have no mention of any children whatsoever, and so I suspect she was barren. The first man had married her. She was a beautiful woman. She would make a good mother. He marries her. 6 months pass, 9 months pass, a year pass, 18 months, 2 years. She's not pregnant. She's not getting pregnant. We're not going to have any Social Security. And by the way, that's what children were. In the ancient world, children was equivalent to our Social Security. By the way, my kids still are, but that's beside the point. And so he put her away, and which was not uncommon at all. And then here comes along another guy. He sees her. She's pretty. Maybe the problem is with the husband, not with the wife, and so he marries her. And yet no children come there. And then a third, and then a fourth, and then a fifth. And after fifth, she's now maybe in her 30s, maybe late 30s. And now everybody says even if she could have children, she's past the age now. And so now a man just lets her live with him. And of course, all of that's made her an outcast in her community. It's why she comes to draw water at noon. She's tired of the whispering. She's tired of the giggles. She's tired of the gossip, the leers, the looks. You just add to the list whatever you want. Jesus brings it up. And you think, Lord, how could you bring that up? And yet that's one thing about Jesus. Jesus knows all about us. And that's why he brought it up. He wanted her to know he knew all about her. And she quickly changes the subject. I mean, after Jesus explains that what she has said is true, she says, sir, I can see that you're a prophet. By the way, Nicodemus said the same thing when you go to his in John chapter 3. Lord, we know, our rabbi, we know that you are come from God. No one could do what you're doing unless God was with him. She basically says the exact same thing here. And so she quickly switches the subject. And my guess is because she didn't want to talk about the failures in her life, her marriages, what she was doing in the present. And so she turns to church and she says, our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. And once again, you have Jesus, he slides off into a discussion of worship because she had asked about it. I mean, here's Jesus and he's basically saying, if you want to talk about church, we'll talk about church. I'm not going to push you. I'm not going to embarrass you. In fact, if anything's going on in this text, Jesus speaks with the same kind of respect and compassion to this woman that he had with Nicodemus. Brothers and sisters, listen to me. We need to be a people who, when we encounter folks whose lives are messed up, we need to realize that except for the grace of God, there we are. I work out at River Bend Maximum Security Prison, and every Thursday night when I get to walk out of that place, and I can't tell you how emotional that is, because I can walk out. I know, except for the grace of God, that's where I might be. And if we learn anything from Jesus, it's Jesus' incredible compassion on those who were caught in a life of sin, as all of us have been. I mean, Jesus didn't begin to berate her and say, how dare you and how could you? Instead, he began to move her along the pathway of faith in him. I love, after Jesus had discussed worship for, about 10 seconds, the woman responds to him and says, I know that the Messiah is coming. Oh, we read through that way too fast. She didn't say, we know. In fact, I don't know if the Samaritans, Rodney, had a belief in the Messiah or not. I've never really studied that particular subject, but whether the Samaritans did or not, this Samaritan woman did. I don't know if she had heard it from the Jews who were passing by. I don't know if she had heard it in conversation when people weren't giggling and laughing at her. But at some point in time, she had come to believe that one was coming, the Lord's Messiah, who could fix everything. And by the way, among everything was her. I know that this Messiah is coming. And when he comes, he'll make everything right. And when Jesus heard that, he had heard what he was looking for. He said, the one who is speaking to you, I am he. With that, an incredible transformation took place. This woman who was a nobody, this woman who was an outcast, this woman who was embarrassed by her life, all at once became a woman who changed a community and continues to change people's lives 2,000 years later. We don't know her name, but you can be confident God gave her a new name. As I was sharing this with Blake, he said, I've got a song we've got to learn. So Blake, come up here and teach us about a woman whose life was changed by Jesus.
And we'll learn it. It's fairly simple. We'll learn it just by singing through it a couple times together.
I will change your name. You shall no longer be called wounded, outcast, lonely, or afraid. I will change your name. Your new name shall be Confident, joyfulness, overcoming one, faithfulness, friend of God, one who seeks my faith. I will change your name. You shall no longer be called wounded, outcast, lonely, or afraid. Confident, joyfulness, faithfulness, friend of God, one who seeks my faith, you're one who seeks my faith.
She was changed. At that moment, she left her water jar and headed back to town as fast as she could. And can I paraphrase what she said? If I can paraphrase what the text says up here, here's what she said. She says, I am a nobody who's telling everybody about somebody who can save anybody. And John goes on to say that many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but of all those who followed Jesus, here's the first one who became a missionary and went into her community and began to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody, and many of the antibodies were saved. And so can you be. I don't know what your name in the past has been. We sang a lot of names up there just a moment ago. But I can tell you who your name in the future will be if you put your trust in Jesus Christ. If you turn from a life of sin, put all of your hope in Him, if you're buried with Him, born of water and the Spirit, and begin a journey, I promise you, your name will be Christian. And you can be that right now if you're not. We invite you to come as together we stand and sing.